get the symphony.
This is Sunday Drive on the VOCM Bigland FM Radio Network. The views and opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of this station. Now here's your host for Sunday Drive, Daryl Power.
Come on, you good people, I'll sing you a song about the poor people, how they get along. Good afternoon to everybody out there in Radioland, right across the island portion of the province and up in the big land of Labrador. Loves me a bit of Labrador. Welcome to the show. It's a real Valentine's-esque show today. Run by Wearing Red, might I ask. The producer, Raylene Mackey, she's in the house. We have are devoting most of the first hour to love. So I want you to reach out there, folks, and just grab the nearest tissue because you just might need it. You know, we're going to talk a little bit about love. I have two very special guests. They are world-renowned authors and like typical world-renowned authors from Newfoundland, they're only known around the world as opposed to here in the province. No more. Today, we will share this with the people of this province. Michelle Keep and her partner, Joshua Keep, are in the house. Guys, welcome to the show.
Hey.
Thank you very much for having us.
Are you a married couple?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Very married.
I'm so glad you came in here for the Valentine's special because it's interesting on so many levels that you guys, A, write sort of romance. Romance with a twist and an edge and sometimes a little bit of steam, people. Sometimes
a lot of steam.
A lot of steam.
So the window's open in the studio, I can tell you. And Raylene has a fan out there. But you're not only do you write wonderful fiction, but you're also a couple.
Yeah.
Yep. Been almost 18 years now, just a couple months from that big set point.
You share a brain, you write together.
Basically, yeah.
Now, we'll talk about the writing a bit down the road. I want to talk about two of you guys first. Tell us how you met.
Well, I'll start because...
Okay, you're better at telling this one.
Are you sure? Because we can have that. I mean, the scrap now for this Valentine show would be gold.
We will save the fights for the books. That's how it works. It makes us the most money when we get the fights out through the
novel. Right. Yes. What's the point of just having a fight out into the air and nobody gets to read it?
Yeah. Nobody's paid for us to fight on the air.
If a fight falls in the forest, does anybody hear it? You know what I mean? Does anybody read it?
So, we met as teenagers. Like, you know, high school sweethearts, except we didn't go to the same high school. I was in Newfoundland born and raised, lived in Bonavista, Catalina, back and forth.
I
was from very rural Ontario.
Shout out to Catalina. We're her rural. What town?
Originally Hillsburg, which no longer exists anymore because it was amalgamated into Erin. And then I moved to Maxwell, which is a town of 400 people, and I lived on the outskirts of it. So
shout out to Hillsburg and
Maxwell.
So, you know, teenager, still in high school at that point, you know, both of us insomniacs then, couldn't sleep. So here I was, I got the first computer of my life. I'm just staying up one night, like, what am I going to do? Killing time, I can't sleep. School's tomorrow in the morning, but I don't care. So find something to do. And it's just like, on my computer, going to like AOL Instant Messenger, chat with some random people. Yeah, okay. It gives you a list of a bunch of people under the top. I select writing, reading, who's interested in that. So it gives me a big random list. There's only one Canadian on it. I said, well, that's who I'm chatting with. And that was Michelle.
So me up at like an ungodly hour on a school night paid off.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing. It's like to meet online. Like that's when no one did.
This was back when everybody figured he was just a serial killer playing the very long con.
People were very convinced of that. Like, they tried to, when I flew out, when finally it came a year later time for me to meet her, I took my scholarship money for graduating top of my class in Catalina and blew that on a ticket to Ontario. Her friends thought, he's a serial killer coming to kill you. We're going to stop him from getting you.
So they literally sabotaged. So they were supposed to pick him up from Pearson, which is like the biggest airport, and drive him to Erin, which was, I think, like an hour and a half away. So they were supposed to go pick him up at, I think his flight got in at like 7 in the morning or something like that. And they told me at 4 o'clock, they're like, oh no, we're not going to do that. We think that you shouldn't do this. He's probably a serial killer. I'm like, oh, thanks for letting me know now. We have 3 hours before he like lands. And now we have to figure out how to get him here. So like, that was a very stressful evening.
Yeah, small town. Around the Bay. Boy, I've never been to Toronto before in my life. So he had dumped into Pearson and was like, oh, by the way, you know, I don't have a cell phone. This is 2001. Like, trying to figure out, all right, now you got to get out into the middle of nowhere. She lives on an old farm property. Her nearest neighbor is like a 20-minute walk down the road. Nowhere. Like, I got to get out there. I don't know how. I've never even been to the province before.
And this was like in April. But so like usually Ontario is okay in April. Like that's usually, we actually had a spring there when I was growing up. But not this year, apparently, because it started hailing on him.
Big chunks of hail, like, you know, like just thumb-sized chunks of hail just pelting me. It was ridiculous. I was very angry at those, I guess, well-thinking friends, but by the time I did manage to find my way out into the middle of nowhere, Ontario, that anger had built up substantially, but when she opened the door and I saw her,
it all just, like, you could see, like, he was, like, super tense and then just, like, softened.
I got to tell you, you know, you're a fine-looking fella, but if it came out that you were a serial killer, I was like, oh, I'm not surprised. I can see that.
It'd be the worst paper trail. It would be the worst paper trail that, like, ever existed.
The most incompetent serial killer in history. Yeah.
I mean, you were young, so.
Oh, yeah, to be fair. But that's an in thing now these days, judging by Netflix and Twitter, the serial killer thing.
Well,
so,
like, when I first moved here, everybody was like, oh, but weren't you afraid he was a killer? And I'm like, no. And then, like, 3 years later, his nan started dating off
the internet.
The internet. Yeah. Like, she was on all the dating sites.
Shout out,
like,
to Nan, too.
Yeah. And she found love late in life on the internet, so.
I mean, you guys found love when... This is the very beginnings of online chatting as a platform.
This was back before Google existed.
Like AOL.
we were still on Alta Vista.
We all had AOL, remember? It was a beast. It was like the beast before Google. Everything ran through AOL.
Yeah, that's what we met through, AOL Instant Messenger, AIM, which was terrible. But
you both have a great love of reading, and that's really what sort of started the relationship.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Both of us were huge readers.
We liked very different things.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And we introduced each other to a lot of different things. She was big into Margaret Atwood. I was big into science, history, and sci-fi.
Historical fiction.
Well, Margaret Atwood and historical fiction, I mean, I'm on both sides here. Right?
Yeah. Right? Eventually, kind of, you see the benefits of both. So I used to read a lot of, like, weepy Russian lit and stuff like that. But
so then, were you writing? Like, when did the writing begin?
So my parents actually sent me, like, a box of, like, my old kid stuff. And I found that I first published my first book when I was in grade 2, and it was about a bunny rabbit who was going off to save the world and try to get everybody into recycling and environmentalism. So, and I, like, did all the illustrations and I did all of the story myself, and I made, like, a book cover and everything. It was
that could work today.
Yeah, basically it's what I do now. So
you were ahead of your time. Yeah. Like, super bunny environmentalist.
Yeah. But once we got together, I think immediately the first thing was love letters. And a love letter, it's not a real love letter unless it's handwritten on a piece of paper and mailed the old-fashioned way. So we have a lot of those old letters still back and forth. And immediately, like, you know, like, oh, Doth, I love you so much to the end of the story. Like, it's a bit tiresome after a while. So the lover's letters instead started to become like, let's imagine what it would be like if we could be together, because we're at this point.
Yeah, it was kind of like the
Beach
Boys. Like, wouldn't it be nice if we were older? And just kind of fantasizing about how our life would be once we finally were able to live it freely.
So, yeah, the love letters became like little stories. What if we could be together right now?
Mm-hmm. I'm with Joshua and Michelle Keep. They are the owners of a beautiful love story, and they are writers of wonderful love stories. When we come back right after the break, they have brought a raft of their best-selling novels, and we're going to open up the calls. If someone wants to call in and give a little shout-out to someone that they love and want to wish a happy Valentine's Day, that would... Judging from the amount of books here, almost guarantee a copy of one of their books. I'm sure you'll enjoy them. Raylene, let's take the first break. Okay, back in a flash.
Call now, 273-5211 or 1-888-590-8626. That's 1-888-590-VOCM. Your Sunday drive continues right after this. That's cool. This is Sunday Drive on the VOCM Bigland FM radio network.
The Sunday Drive with Daryl Power on VOCM is brought to you by Robothan McKayan Marshall. Injured? Robothan McKayan Marshall can help. Make the call today.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the show. I'm with Michelle Keep and Joshua Keep. They are friends, lovers, world-famous authors, and we're enjoying the wonderful story of how they met. And now let's fast forward to the time where you first actually, you decided to make the plunge to move to town.
Yeah, so I actually, Josh had to keep talking me out of trying to get, like, to leave home at 16 and become, like, emancipated. So 3 days after I graduated high school.
I've always been the voice of reason.
Yeah, 3 days after I graduated high school, I hopped on a plane. I had no idea of anyone here except for him. I sat on the plane next to a very nice man and his daughter who were coming to Newfoundland for vacation. So they helped calm my nerves a little bit being on a plane for the first time by myself. And then I landed here and I basically had like a suit bag full of like everything I've ever owned.
She had a hockey bag that could have been stuffed full of three corpses, to be honest with you. Yeah. That's how heavy it was.
Yeah. So I met him and I thought it was the coolest thing because like I grew up in a small town. So we came here and we walked to the Avalon Mall and we had Chinese food. And that was like the coolest thing in the world. Like, oh my God, you can walk to the mall? It's right there. and then now we're a million years later and still excited by just being able to go to the mall together.
But it was by no means like at 16 years old, you just go on and live happily ever after.
Apparently. I got really lucky.
She did get really lucky, let me tell you, because she's an extremely trusting person. When I first flew out to meet her, blowing my scholarship money, which was, you know, I'm not advising anybody to do that. Don't blow your school money on going out to meet the girl you love. But it worked out great for me. So I went and met her, and then at the end of the trip, she came with me to Pearson to go back. And so it's a tearful, horrible goodbye. And I'm giving her all the money I have, like bills, coins. I said, like, go get a cab, you know, take you there safely. Don't trust anyone.
So like, I remembered all of his words very sincerely. I remembered them. So I went to the bathroom and I cried and I cried and I cried and I cried. And I went out. And so I'm in Pearson. I'm by myself. I don't know where to get a taxi. So I go up to one of the Air Canada employees and I say, where do I get a cab? And he said, oh, well, I'm just getting off work now. So just follow me. I'm like, wicked. Get to follow this person and he's going to show me where a cab is. And it wasn't until we were getting on a shuttle and then we were in a parking lot that I started to kind of think that there might be something else going on. So then I get into this random gentleman's van and he takes me to Indian food. And we have my first exposure to Indian food. It was lovely. And then he just starts driving me home. So the story, apparently, is that he often sees women who are trying to flee domestic violence, who are flying standby and whose flights get canceled. So he has made it a habit where if a woman seems to be distressed, like I was, that he'd offer them a ride so that they wouldn't have to go back to an awful situation.
Creepy.
So, yes. So I'm like a 16-year-old girl and I'm like, in this vehicle. And like, you know something's wrong, but you don't know, like, because he was somebody that I figured I could trust. He was an employee of the airport. And it wasn't until like really late along that I realized that there was something very, very wrong. So yes, I was incredibly naive. I think I'm a lot better now.
When she told me the story, I had like a heart attack after the fact. I'm like, well, everything turned out fine. He was really nice. God bless him. He's just a good saint. But I'm like, how did you do that? Oh my God.
Not my proudest moment.
Wow. So when did you decide to start writing? How old were you guys then?
I mean, we started playing video games together and then we started just kind of like making stories up for our characters. And then we started writing stories for our characters, and we used to kind of like send them back and forth, like getting feedback and trying to just make the other person happy, like similar to what we were doing with our love letters back in the day.
So that happened, I guess, about 2003, 2004, something like that. And at one point, we just happened to post a story on the internet, on a forum, before social media. And so some people saw that and were like, wow, that's really good. Like, actually, like, that's amazing. You should have your own website so people can come read your stuff. And I'm like, well, I don't have the time and care to make a website. He's like, I'm going to make one for you. So this guy loved our story so much, he made a website for us just to post the stories. I was like, wow, okay, that's cool. And so for that point on, we just used to write stories. And we never had any idea of making money off. This is before ebooks came along, keep in mind. Like, to me, small boy from Bonavista, Catalina area, it was just like...
Yeah, I grew up with the nobody makes money as a writer. So it was very much not something I was even considering.
No, wasn't on the radar.
It was for fun.
Yeah. Just for fun. But we kept getting fans and more fans. And everybody was like, well, you can write some more stuff. And I'm like... Yeah, but I got to work.
Therein lies the rub.
Right. So at like the end of 2011, I found this just article about this man who he had been writing fantasy stuff for his website. And then he started publishing it on Amazon through a program they had called KDP, so Kindle Direct Publishing. So this is still when like there's a lot of talk about like vanity publishing, which is when you pay somebody to publish your book so that you can give copies to your friends and family, and basically just that.
That's what self-publishing used to mean.
Yeah, and then it kind of diverged into there's actually like a serious contingent of people who are doing marketing plans and who are actually trying to do this as something to make money at. So I read the article and I'm like, well, why don't we just try it? Like, I mean, we can see if there's anything there. And Josh is like, you're never going to make money at that. We're never going to make money. We're just like, you know, who are we? And
I said, well, it's Newfoundland mentality. Come on.
Yep.
Come off her.
Yep.
Yeah. We're not making enough of that.
So we tried
What are you doing that for?
We tried it. And it was actually our 7-year anniversary last weekend of publishing and selling our first book.
And so how many books have you written now?
I have lost count.
Really?
We have sold altogether since we started over 1 million copies. It was last year we hit that milestone, 1 million. That's everything total. That's paperback, that's ebooks, that's audiobooks, short stories, long stories, everything.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think. I wonder what a Wayne Johnson or a Michael Crummy or something has sold in terms of numbers, in terms of where you actually sit. You know, that's a lot of copies.
It is.
It's hard to compare to because a lot of. We're up against the old the old school publishers with paperback. We mostly do ebooks.
Yeah, and we also have a lot more price flexibility. So, like, you know, we do promotions for 99-cent sales and stuff like that. So,
you don't see a lot of that from the old school types.
Because basically, you decided that instead of, even though your books have become so popular, sold so many, you haven't sort of, you know, pardon the phrase, gotten into bed with a larger publisher, you still make, you're your own entity, now your own company.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're kind of control freaks in that way.
we had an offer from Montlake, which is, they're not one of the old publishers, they're Amazon.com's publishing house. So they're like a big shot on the scene now, like pushing. They reached out to us and made an offer, and we had some back and forth with them, and it was like, really liked it, but then it was like, well, they want to change our covers. Our covers are too spicy. They want
They're spicy, people.
And there's no nudity or anything, but it's just too spicy. They want to tone it back a bit more, and so they want to do this and that. And it was like,
and there was going to be a lot more like back and forth about like, well, we don't like this plot element. We want something else, and we just.
That's not my trope.
Yeah. Like,
that kind of thing.
And our fans like our stories for what they are. So we're like, well, if we're going to have to change everything, then what's even the point of following that?
We learned long ago, like when we first got together, I remember there was two pieces of advice that really kind of sunk in, I think, that have led for us to having a happy life. It's just that one of those things was big changes make you miserable. Doesn't matter if it's a big change for the good or the bad. It was a psychologist who said that, who did a study of it. Said people who win $1 million end up making themselves miserable because they change their life and they shake everything up. So with us, whatever we do, we still live basically the same as we did when we were scraping by. We just now have more money in the bank, so we feel like secure. Like, you know, And the other thing is just that the little things count. And like just having control of our work for us is huge. It's a small thing, but it's huge.
Do you represent, has anyone else approached you to represent them? That seems to be the next step.
Yeah, so we've had quite a few people who are interested in it. And it's mostly just we try to wonder about like how much time and effort can we put into somebody else's work. Right. Because
do you want to edit someone else's work?
Yeah.
And nurture them.
It's tough.
We have done it. Like we put out some works of other people. We did a big collection of it, I guess a couple of, not long ago, and we're planning on doing another this year. But is it something I want to do all the time?
Yeah, because it is a lot of work, and especially when you want to make sure that you're helping people and you're doing it the right way, that you're not just phoning it in and just like slapping on something.
She has no ability to phone it in.
I have no ability. I have no chill.
Maybe short stories might work, but I mean, at least you're taking them in smaller pieces, right?
Yeah. And it is a good way, if anybody here is interested in getting started writing, short stories are awesome to kind of feel that satisfaction of finishing. Because I know a lot of people get concerned about, like, they get to the halfway point and then they just seem to stall. Pushing through and actually trying to finish something is really difficult.
That's why I write songs. I don't have the patience to write it. I try to squeeze it down to 50 words, right? Yeah. We are going to take the second break of the day. If anyone, we have lots of books here, and we haven't had any callers yet, but that often happens. Then all of a sudden, the train starts. If you want to win your very own novel today, give us a call. Send someone you know and love a Valentine's wish, an early Valentine's wish, and we'll see if we can't get you a book. Raylene, let's go to the break. When we get back, we're going to talk about the novels themselves. Okay, don't go away.
Call now, 273-5211 or 1-888-590-8626. That's 1-888-590-VOCM. Your Sunday drive continues right after this. This is Sunday Drive on the VOCM Bigland FM radio network.
Welcome back to the show. I'm with authors and couple, Michelle and Joshua Keep. Now, we're going to get to the books, but one more question. I want to talk about how a woman like your mom, let's give her a little shout out, because obviously she must have had questions with such a young couple forming this young bond just after her child has gone from Catalina to town for university, I guess, was it?
Yeah, we were at Bonavista at that point, so we moved back and forth over the years between the two towns, and so I just left, and then so I've been away at Memorial for less than a year, and I come back with my new girlfriend, and she's like, oh, okay, well, and she was like, it's lovely to meet you, and was like, I've set up the couch upstairs for you, and your old room for Michelle, and I'm like, that's not gonna work, Mom. She's like, what do you mean? And like, well, like, we've been together now almost a full year. We're living together in the same place, and 2 years been together. Like, we're gonna stay in the same bed, or
I'm getting progressively redder and redder.
Like, what a lovely way to meet mother-in-law.
Yeah, I feel a little bad about that, but you gotta go in. You gotta establish this right away. So we're staying in the same room. Where I'm gonna rent a room at the hotel down the street. And so my mom just stared at me for a moment. Okay. And turned away, and that was good. Everything else has been sunshine and roses. She loves Michelle. My whole family adores her. She's one of
us. Well, she's kind of adorable.
She's very adorable.
They're my family now.
You know, you're welcome to the new Newfoundland right here, you know? Elaine Abbott, shout out to you for your forward thinking.
And she now buys all of our paperbacks. She's the first person who buys every paperback, and she has them all signed. So,
so let's talk about the books that you have. What's the bestseller?
So, Sold to the Hitman is probably still our bestseller. This one, it just took off. And, like, whatever it was about it, it just hit the right time, the right place, the right cover, the right blurb, whatever it was.
We were, like, in the top 10 for almost all the charts for solid weeks.
Yeah.
This is North America?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, that one just, like, took off. Like, the weird thing about writing is, like, you can write the best book, but you can't force a hit. So, like, no matter what you do for, like, pushing money behind it or whatever, like, you can't make a 50 Shades of Grey or you can't make a Harry Potter. Like, that's just something in the air that is getting everybody excited about it. So Sold to the Hitman is still the one that just gets people really excited about it for whatever reason.
And they're not, like, local, they're internet, like, yeah. International settings. There's no 50 Shades of Bay.
Not yet. it's on our to-do list.
Yeah, I've been rolling around an idea for a while. Yeah. Like, I want to get it just right. But if I'm going to represent my home in a book, I want to do it just right.
But the second you start thinking that you want to do something just right is when you put it off forever. Because
exactly. Yeah. that's killer.
Yeah. So what is the general... They're not just romance novels per se. There's a bit of mystery and intrigue and action to them as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it's mostly like... We started doing fantasy, but now our main pen name, Alexis Abbott, is romantic suspense. So it's a lot of tough guys and...
Mafioso guys. It's like, you know, a bit of The Godfather. It's a bit of like John Wick, except the woman doesn't die. She's right there by his side through the whole thing, you know?
Yeah.
And what did you go with the pen name?
So Abbott is... Yeah. Josh's That's, family name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my mom and grandmother. I was pretty insistent. I want Abbott. That should be our main pet name.
Yeah.
I wanted, it was a tribute to my grandmother who passed away shortly after, and to my mother who raised me all by herself. So.
And Alexis, who, which just for the classy sort of element to it.
We liked the alliteration, and we also liked that, like, we originally were thinking Alex, so that it could be kind of ambiguous whether it's male or female, but then we settled on Alexis since we decided we wanted to go harder into the romance than just like the thriller.
So if you search romance authors by alphabetical order, that you guys will jump to the top of the list.
That's a bonus. That's a bonus.
If you put in Alexis Abbott, AlexisAbbott, into Google, we have our own little box, all the top search results, that's us.
Yeah, I was pretty thrilled to see that one day. I'm like, oh my God, I have a box.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
So let's talk a bit about the writing style, because I got this vision of two people with one brain, because you write together. Mm-hmm. Are you in the same room, side by side?
Yeah.
Yep.
And talking and working on together at one paragraph at a time? How are you doing this?
So Josh usually takes like the lead on like the plotting and like the creative side of like getting things started. So he'll start like building the scene and starting the story.
And that's a usual thing. Like, with us, we don't have a lot of hard and fast rules.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, with us, we like you said, it's like one brain, it's just one lobe versus the other. We're going to just kind of find a way. But usually, I'll get things rolling. Okay, the story's going to be about this kick butt guy who's in the mafia and he does this and that. And so I'm going to start doing that. And then once I kind of, I'm like, okay, where should I go from here? She just steps in and takes over.
So I'll read over what he says, then I'll make sure that it all makes sense. There's no typos or anything like that. And then I'll add on to it. And then he'll read over what I say, make sure it all makes sense. So it's actually really nice for us because of the fact that then you kind of know the entire way through that, like, there's not big plot holes or anything like that, because otherwise it would have been like, wait, what's happening? Like, what's going on?
Makes for very natural dialogue. Because, I mean, it's a romance. So most, the core of the romance is the two people, right, who are in love. And then back and forth between them. So for us, it's like I always end up taking over the male lead. So when it's a conversation, it's like, that's me writing from that perspective. It's the female lead, that's her. Mm-hmm. And that back and forth thing becomes really natural.
It's amazing.
So we try to keep things pretty light for plotting, just because of the fact that once you start getting going, you don't exactly know where it's going to go. Because, like, to have a natural dialogue, you have to be a bit flexible about, okay, things might not go the way I expect between them. So
I would always try to, like, plot things. I would, like, cause I have to be very serious about this. I'm like, you know, I'm an author now. I got to be very serious about this. It's important. So I would always try to have something, things very firmly plotted out. And I would even make contingencies. Okay, if this doesn't work out, then this could be an alternate route things could go. And she would always just destroy, absolutely obliterate my plans. Her character would react in some way, and like, never would have occurred to me in 1,000 years that someone would react that way to that.
But I'm a troublemaker.
But okay, that's where we're going now. We follow it to that natural conclusion.
Yep. So listen, dear... Books obviously deal with love. Let's go right back to the beginning where we started. What have you guys learned about love, and what can you like, what kind of tips can you give others on being a successful couple in this crazy day and age?
So we're actually hoping to start a podcast this year kind of talking about that. It's kind of been outlined and not started yet, but because there's just so much to think about. I think being forgiving and open and thoughtful is really important.
One thing I think is super important, like, you know, is like, you got to have faith in each other that the other person is putting you first in their mind, mm-hmm. and you're putting them first in your mind. Like a little example, I find, like, you know, we've all been in that moment, like, you're thinking about getting some new thing, some new gadget, some new attachment for your car, something like that. And it's like, is it worth the money? You have the money for it. If you're questioning that, you have the money for it. It's just a matter of, is it worth it? Mm. So whenever I get stuck in those kind of situations, I think to myself, you know what? I'm going to get something for Michelle. And I take that money and I get something for her as a little surprise. And that's just kind of the way she works in return. And so it's just putting that faith and trusting the other, putting them first in your life and mm-hmm. trusting that they're putting you first in their life.
It sounds simple, but it's also, you know,
it's hard.
It's impossible at many levels for some people.
Yeah, but yeah. I think it is important to just kind of realize that, like, a relationship, like any relationship, it has to be a give and take, and you have to kind of, you can't be selfish about things. So I think what I really like about writing the characters that we tend to write is that they are like the yin and yang. Like, they have, typically he teaches her how to be stronger and more confident and more capable, or like he brings those traits out in her, or she already has them, but, like, you know, is self-conscious about it or whatever. And she brings out like a softer, kinder, more compassionate side of him. So like that tends to be how it works in our stories. And I think that's the way you kind of have to look at a lot of different relationships, is like, well, what am I bringing out in them and what are they bringing out in me? And is that,
it happens.
Yeah, is that what I want? And if so, then it's like you have to go full in then.
Yeah, because it's also surprising, because if you're writing together, working together, living mm-hmm. together, it's a team of two, and that doesn't work, and yet you've managed to do it. One question before I let you go. Writing can be done anywhere. Why aren't you on a beach in Tahiti?
We've thought about that.
Yeah.
Last time we tried to do something like that, we got there and we were immediately robbed for thousands of dollars. And I said, you know what? I'm going back to Newfoundland.
Yeah.
The weather stinks, but I'm going back.
Yeah. At least you know who's robbing you here.
Right. We have like a conference coming up next month that we're excited to go to, but I know that we're not going to get any work there, because the second you're in a different place, like, I mean, it's a work conference, but we're not going to be doing any writing.
Mm-hmm.
We can tease ourselves as often as we want that we will be super productive on a beach in Tahiti. We are not going to be productive on a beach in Tahiti. We are going to be lazing around and just chilling out. So,
well, just, you know, and take a break too. You deserve it. So people can find you on Facebook at Alexis Abbott.
Yeah.
Want to spell Alexis for someone who might be
Alexis.
There it is, folks. Abbott with two B's?
Yep.
Not three?
Two T's.
Yeah, we're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Pinterest. We're everywhere. If you Google us, you will find us.
Yep. We're all the top spots. Everything's there on Google. Yeah. If you type in Alexis Abbott, our audiobooks, paperback, ebooks.
And you can buy all our paperbacks on chapters.ca or on amazon.ca. The local library has a bunch of copies of our ebooks and paperbacks if you wanted to try us out for free.
Yeah, shout out to the local libraries. They're amazing.
And yeah.
They support authors. Just absolutely amazing.
Great. That's wonderful news to hear. Well, ladies and gentlemen, our hero and heroine have saved the day. They have captured the bad guy, and they are currently just walking off into the sunset together.
Lovely.
It's a great love story. You're a wonderful couple. I'm really glad we had the chance to chat.
Thank you so much for having us. This was so much fun.
That's Joshua Keep and Michelle Keep. Pick up one of their novels and have a read. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go to the last break of the hour. When we come back, fingers crossed, there is a wonderful play that's occurring. Coming up this week, it's called Between Breaths. It's Robert Chafe dreaming on a spectacular just a level that most other people wouldn't even dare to, but that's the way he works. We're going to have a chat with him about his upcoming play Between Breaths. Don't go away.
Call now, 273-5211 or 1-888-590-8626. That's 1-888-590-VOCM. Your Sunday drive continues right after this. This is Sunday Drive on the VOCM Bigland FM radio network.
Welcome back to the show. That was a great chat with Joshua and Michelle Keep. They are like gotta tell you that those guys are cranking out a novel every 4 to 6 weeks. That boggles my mind. Some people do not work that fast, but they strive to create beauty and perfection. My next guest is Robert Chafe, who has been wowing the people of this province for years now and is in the middle of a new baby, the birth of a new baby. A little while ago, he did the story of Between Breaths, which is the story of Dr. John Lean, who many people know and we're going to learn about soon. But this week, for 2 days at the Arts and Culture Center, this show is going to be brought to the stage again with the Newfoundland Symphony Orchestra. Yes, folks, the Newfoundland Symphony Orchestra. Robert Chafe is on the line. Robert, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. You know, you could have got Shanigan-Uck to do it.
We didn't even ask. We just assumed they wouldn't be up for it. God love Santa Good Luck.
This is a big idea. First of all, you know, your work, which has been so well respected here in the province and nationally, at what point during this play did you say, I wonder what would it sound like with music?
Well, you know, all of our work has music in it. At some point early in the conception of it, we start to have conversations about what the music is going to sound like. It's a big part of how myself and Jill Kiley, my director, think about the story and how the story comes to be. So we always choose a composer or composers early on in the process. And we knew fairly early on with this one that we wanted to work with the ones. Phil, Jerry, and Andrew have been friends of ours for years, and we had conversations with them over the years about maybe working on a project. But when this one came along, we knew it was the right project, and they agreed. So they wrote the music for the show. And then back in 2016, we did a workshop presentation of it at the DF Cook at the Mon Music School. And we were sitting there in the days leading up to it, and we were listening to the music. And Jill turned to me and said, you know, this music is so extraordinary. This would be incredible if it was orchestrated with the full symphony. And the producer in me, my eyes just kind of went like sausages. I'm like, is that even possible? And so Pat Foran, our producer, picked up the phone and called Hugh Donnan at the symphony. And a conversation started 2 years ago that is coming to fruition this Thursday evening at the Arts and Culture Center.
I snoozed on the first run of this, so I am totally tickled pink to be, and that's what happens, folks. Many people snooze and lose on the chance to see some of your work. Tell us about the really, yes, it's great that the symphony is there, but the story is as important as the fact of the symphony. Tell me about Dr. John Lean. Tell me, how did you learn about him, and why he's so special?
Well, I went to school with a couple of John's kids back in the day, so I always knew about him. And he was, when I was in high school and university, he was as about as famous as you could get as a conservationist and a scientist. He was always on MTV and always on CBC, it seemed, talking about his work. He was, to jog people's memories, he was known as the whale man in Newfoundland because for many years, from the late 70s up until the cod moratorium and beyond, he and his group, the Whale Rescue Group, would go out and rescue stranded humpbacks and other whales that were entangled in fishing nets. And over the course of his career, he rescued over 500 animals. And previous to John's work in Newfoundland, these animals, when they get caught in the nets, they'd either die through starvation and exhaustion, or the fishermen, without any other recourse, would kill them to try to get their nets back. Of course, that would result in the loss of all this fishing gear. And so John's work not only saved the lives of over 500 animals, but like thousands and thousands, millions of dollars worth of fishing gear was saved. And so when I was growing up as a kid with fisher people on the other side of my family, I heard his name a lot. And atypically, I heard his name a lot with a voice of praise. Like the Fisher people in my family talked about John like he was a hero, you know. And I thought, that's really strange to hear a conservationist and a scientist being spoken about by fishermen that way. And so that's immediately what drew my attention to him. I guess around 2010, I had the idea of writing a play about him. But once I started doing the research on him, it just blossomed into this much bigger kind of investigation of the story. His story goes much deeper than that.
That's the beauty of him, is because it wasn't a one-man show. He had these fishermen who were ready at the drop of a hat to drop what they were doing and go and help out.
Yeah, essentially, he started this organization, and he was very... he was very insistent on including the fishermen in the process and teaching them about the whales and why they came to be tangled in nets and kind of dispelling any kind of fear that was inherent in a lot of fishermen. Traditionally, fishermen in Newfoundland would be very wary of these animals, of course, and he did a huge educational part of that. But, you know, he was also really, really famous for example, he worked 3 or 4 hours with his head down in this cold water saving these animals. And then after it was all over, exhausted and soaking wet, he'd stick around to help them pull in their catch, you know, which is really above and beyond. And he had and continues to have this incredible reputation with people in the industry in this province. So, yeah, and then when I started researching the show, and you know, one of the first questions we asked, because I didn't know much about him, I hadn't heard about him in recent years, when I started to research and I realized he just died, and when I started researching the show in 2011, he just died in 2010, and when I started investigating how he'd come to pass, he had a disease that affected him mentally and physically. He eventually lost all mobility and was kind of non-responsive in a wheelchair at the end of his life. And so that became a big part of the story as well. And yeah, it all worked out, you know, 3 or 4 years of researching and writing. And it's all come to this. And yeah, we're super excited.
I'll tell you this story, which I don't know if you've heard or not, but a friend of mine who lives down on the Southern Shore, like literally believed, you know, John Lean was on the level of godlike status. And
I believe it.
The last time the two of them met, John was in his shed and he was leaving. And John said, he was leaving, and or the last time he was down there together, he said, "You forgot your raincoat." And he said, "I'll get it the next time." It was on a nail behind the door, and it's still there, hasn't been touched 9 years later.
I've heard this story. Yeah. I don't doubt it. I mean, when I started researching the show, of course, with all of these shows, I went around and talked to John's family and friends, and the level of respect and admiration and grief too, because he had just passed away, was unparalleled. I've never experienced anything like that. So it says a lot about the man in terms of the legacy he's left behind. And we were just so, so thankful that the family and John's colleagues were supportive of the piece and that they wanted us to do this. And they remain supportive of what we're doing. And we can't show them the next iteration with the symphony and how exciting that's going to be.
This is actually going to the National Arts Center. Is the symphony going to play, or the Ottawa Symphony going to play at that?
No, the show actually exists in three forms. It exists in the kind of workshop presentation form we did, which is very, very simple. And then it exists in its kind of a form that we did last summer that a bunch of people saw at the LSPU Hall, that sold out for 2 weeks at LSPU Hall. That version of the show is going on tour through the Arts and Culture Centers this spring and then on to the National Arts Center. And now this new version with the orchestra, that's a version of the show that we hope to tour in years coming. But we're going to require kind of partnerships with existing orchestras in other cities. But that we hope to have on tour in the next couple of years. But the show has a good life ahead of it. You know, we've got dates booked throughout Canada for the next couple of years with this show, so it's going to have a nice long life. But I don't know. I have to say, with the size of this show with the orchestra, you know, so if you're thinking about, oh, that would be nice to see, you really have to come see it this week, because it's so big that it's one of those things that if it ever does happen again, it'll probably be in another city. I don't know if it'll ever come back to Newfoundland with the orchestra this way. So if you want to see it, get on it. Get those tickets, that reminding, because I don't know if it'll come back.
It's February 14th and 15th at the St. John's Arts and Culture Center. This is a Valentine's gift of Valentine's gifts right here. Right?
A beautiful love story. People keep on telling me it's a love story, which is really interesting. I never really saw that when I was writing it, but when someone said that to me and I went back and looked at it, it really is It's the story of John's love affair with Newfoundland, but it's also the love affair between him and his wife, Judy. It's a really beautiful story of devotion and love and dedication. So if you're looking for something interesting to do on Valentine's, something different for your love, this would be a great way to spend that night.
Robert, I'm glad you have a love affair with Newfoundland and are able to sort of tease these stories out from the stories that you've heard and stories that you will hear and turning them into these absolutely beautiful pieces of art.
Oh, thanks so much. It's my life's passion. I'm so proud and privileged to get to do it.
Keep doing it. What's on your agenda? But I mean, I know you're not going to rest back into your armchair and say, okay, I think I'm done now. What else is on your plate?
Oh, you know, I have three other plays in development. They'll be coming up. We'll be announcing all those details soon, but I'm working on a piece for myself, a one-man piece for myself that will premiere next year, and I'm working on a couple other pieces, including my first big full musical. So all of that stuff will be coming down the pipe in the next couple of years.
Are you looking for a 50-year-old bald Bayman? Have you could be available. I mean, you got Steve O'Connell. He's bald townie. That doesn't count, you know?
We'll certainly keep you by.
Robert, it's been a pleasure. I can't wait to see it.
Thanks so much, Daryl.
Congrats to you and our statistic fraud once again. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
That's a little late to the news, but oh, wow. That is going to be some serious piece of work right there. Go and see it, folks. Between Breaths, 14th, 15th of February. Yes, that's coming. Thursday, Friday? Wednesday, Thursday? One or the other. You can check your calendar. And we'll be back right after the news.
This is Sunday Drive on the VOCM Bigland FM radio network.
Welcome to the second hour of Sunday Drive. If you're actually really Sunday driving today, be careful. There's lots and lots of pretty nasty weather out there and some pretty nasty cold. You know, stay home, drink some tea, and tune in to the next hour of the show. If I mention Lori Pike to you, you may not know who I'm talking about. But if I mention Grandpa Pike, a hell of a lot more ears will perk up. He is an author, a Newfoundlander, and the author of the very extremely popular Outhouse Reader. And he has just recently put out the first one was Grandpa Pike's Outhouse Reader, and the second one is even funnier for the title. I'm getting full marks for Grandpa Pike's number two. Lori Blackwood Pike is on the line. Grandpa, how are you?
Very good, Daryl. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
I'm glad to have you on. I really enjoyed reading. I do a lot of reading for this show, but your book is so enjoyable because it's just these short little snippets of thoughts, feelings, etc. And what usually ends up happening is you tell yourself, okay, I'll just read one more, you know?
Right.
And suddenly you're just, where has the last hour and a half disappeared? It's a really enjoyable read.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Where are you from?
Originally from Lewisport. I was born in Lewisport, but I've lived several places in Newfoundland and in the Maritimes and in Ontario, etc.
Yeah, I mean, that's the sense you get from reading. Like, you'll talk about a story about when you were in Cape Breton, when you were in Yarmouth, when you were in Ontario, so you definitely seem to have moved around.
Yes, I have, and also I've been a commercial traveler for almost 50 years, and so I've been, not too many roads I haven't been down.
So having all these stories in your back pocket, when did you decide that it was a good idea to start getting a few of these on paper?
Well, when I came off the road about 3 years ago, I got serious about writing and, decided there might be a market out there for some sort of a bathroom reader that maybe a little more upscale than just jokes in it. And, went to Flanker Press, and they agreed with me. And so then I started writing out stories from my experience and took a manuscript to them, and there we are.
And you're also not afraid to sort of self-deprecate and poke fun at yourself, which is, like, really, I find quite endearing. You know,
well, I am that kind of a person. I'm not very smart, not very bright, and so I don't mind making fun of myself.
And you don't mind taking a little poke at others now and then, which is always the Newfoundland way.
That's it.
So did you journal through your career?
Not seriously. I did when I was younger, and I had boxes and boxes of paper that I'd written since I was 13 years old till I was about 40. And then we had a flood in the basement, and I lost it all. Everything got soaked together, just like paper mache. But, you know, having written things down, with me at least, they imprint. So it was easy to remember these stories and start writing them out again or typing them out again on the computer, you know.
So how often are you doing it? Every day?
Pretty much every day. I used to try to write a story a day, but I don't rush myself. And, you know, there's quite a bit of other stuff to do with, you know, on social media and signings and so on. So I'm not writing all the time.
Now, what's also neat is that, I mean, there's literally hundreds of little stories that go through each of these books, mm-hmm. but you do manage to do a little work and manage to put them into little headings and chapters. You still manage to lump them all together.
I sort of sort them out by type of story, you know, and it sort of breaks the book up a bit as well.
So you got two of these done now, or are you done, or are you still picking at some more?
Oh, I'm just getting started. I'm just a young man, Daryl.
It must be interesting though, because you're like, it's not only current day opinions and stuff, which are quite enjoyable. But as we had an earlier conversation, and you really jump back and forth all over the place. It, like, there's one reference to Eastern Provincial Airways, and I say, "Boy, this wasn't written yesterday," or this, you know, it's really spanning your entire life.
Yes, it does. Yeah. You know, the first and the second book, The Outhouse Reader and number two, are very similar in that way. And I already have a third book in that series written. So I'm really working on a fourth, you know. So, but this one will be out for a year or so before we do anything else. It's, you know, the Outhouse Reader, the first book, is still selling extremely well. We're getting to the end of our third printing and probably going to have some more before long. The third one will be out in a year or so. But this one is brand new, hit the market February the 1st or January 31st.
Flanker must be just tickle pink to have you in the roster.
Well, I don't know about that. There are lots of great writers in Newfoundland, Daryl. You know, we're blessed with a lot of people that certainly write as well, and in many cases, way better than me.
Who remember the phrase? I think it was on the Saturday morning CBC show, this big galoot of a culture. It always stuck in my head because we punch above our weight in terms of size and the amount of art that's produced, not only, you know, between music, plays, drama, novels, paintings, et cetera,
yes.
Sculpture. It's amazing.
Yes, it is. Yeah, truly it is.
So you're originally from Stanhope, but where's you hanging your hat these days?
Placentia.
Good old Placentia.
Good old Placentia, yeah.
Well, listen, there's two. So the two books are The Outhouse Reader, Grandpa Pike's Outhouse Reader, and Grandpa Pike's Number Two. They're little great reads. Before I let you go, we're so close to Valentine's. Take a second to give a shout out to your wife, Kathleen, and wish her a happy Valentine's Day.
I will. So, I'm sorry. She's probably listening.
So, I don't mean to put you on the spot here.
Happy Valentine's Day, Katie, and thanks for putting up with me so long.
You know what? I'd like a very good, honest, happy Valentine's Day. That makes total sense to me.
Right.
Listen, Grandpa Pike, it's a pleasure to chat with you. We have two of your books up for grabs for one of our listeners. If you can name the title of either one of the books and call in to Raylene at 273-5211 or 1-800. I'll give you the other. What is it, Raylene? What's the other number? 1-800-590-8626. There it is, right there. Thank you very much, Mr. Pike, for this chat.
Thanks, Daryl. All the best to you, sir.
I'll look forward to your next one. Thanks, bud.
Good enough. Bye.
That is Laurie Pike, also known as Grandpa Pike. We are rolling through this show. I hope you're enjoying it. I sure as hell am. We're going to listen to the commercials, and we'll be back after two shakes of a lamb's tail.
Call now, 273-5211 or 1-888-590-8626. That's 1-888-590-VOCM. Your Sunday drive continues right after this. This is Sunday Drive on the VOCM Bigland FM radio network.
The Sunday Drive with Daryl Power on VOCM is brought to you by Robothan Mackay and Marshall. Injured? Robothan Mackay and Marshall can help. Make the call today.
Welcome back to the show. It was only 12 days ago that the Community Food Sharing Association lost their warehouse, lost their food. There has been an outpouring of love and goodwill and donations to really get the Community Food Sharing Association back on its feet. And that giving is continuing. So this next caller is going to be very familiar to many people who listen to these open line programs. A great buddy of mine, Jonathan Richer, and he has an event coming up that not only do you get to give, but you also get to receive some of the top quality food in the province. Jonathan's on the line. Line one. Mr. Richler. Jeez.
I tell you, I should have hired you for the marketing. That was a great, great intro. You get to give and receive.
Well, brilliant. I mean, really, it's a beautiful. How did this idea come about, Jonathan? And what is the idea?
Well, like most listeners across the province, I wake up and turn on the radio and flipping through the dial to many stations, including yours. I heard about the tragedy 12 days ago that the Community Food Sharing Association's structure burned or was burning, and nobody knew what was happening. So, Daryl, first of all, congratulations on your new show. I haven't had much of a chance to listen because normally Sunday I'm media blackout, but I do know that there's a lot of podcasts I have to catch up on, so I'm looking forward to that. And a very happy new year, my friend.
Happy new year to you. Great to talk to you, and great to hear your voice, Jonathan.
Cheers, brother. You as well. So I woke up, and after a coffee, I realized that, well, I'm a big mouth, and I know a lot of people who have big hearts. And it was within 5 or 10 minutes, and maybe my second coffee, when I realized I could reach out to a number of my friends and colleagues and pals and see if they would be interested in doing an event in a recently constructed community location, and that, of course, would be the St. John's Community Market, also known as the St. John's Farmers Market on 245 Freshwater Road. So, Daryl, what I did was I reached out to a lot of people pretty quickly. You know, you can do that with massive chat, messaging, emails. I didn't even get to the emails. But within 20 to 25 minutes, most of, if not all of, those who I reached out to said, I'm in. And it was great. So the idea is pretty, pretty simple, Daryl. What we want to do is we want to offer a low-cost meal and a high-profile event where people can come and kibitz and snack and see some of the great food offered by this province's top chefs, as well as, you know, cooks like myself, and sit around and listen to the dulcet tones of our master of ceremonies, Patty Daly, and a number of local musicians. I believe we have the Ugly Sticks, as well as Larry Foley, and perhaps more acts coming up. And part of the dream, of course, was to have a silent auction and a 50-50. And I think as early as tomorrow morning, we'll be able to confirm if we do have our lottery license. But things look good because the whole province is on board and trying to raise as much money. As you know, there's been hundreds of thousands already confirmed and committed, and of course there's a brand new commitment from the government to provide a semi-new building, which is that central hub, the central kitchen hub. So it's a great use of that location. But more importantly, we've got Chinched Bistro, Wedgwood Cafe, Sol Azteca, we've got the Merchant Tavern, Cisco Chef Steve Howell, Donut King Chris Shepherd. We've got Fatima's Indian Food, Five Brothers Cheese, Oh My Cheeses, the Grilled Cheese Wizards, Butter Bakery, the Old Dublin Bakery, Andrea Maunder of Saucy and Sweet, Stella Bradbury, and myself with the Jewish Deli. These are most of the the people who are going to be providing food for the event. We're doing a soup and sandwich, or we're doing a sandwich and a starch. Think sort of like a hot soup, cool jazz format, or the Savor Food and Wine Show. You go to each table, you get a drop of a snack. Nothing's going to be more than $10. The dessert buffet is going to be $5. We've got those little pancakes who are going to be there as well. They've got these little teeny tiny Dutch-style pancakes. And if you're thirsty, Kitty Bitty Brewery is going to be there. I believe we've got Collingwood Wines donating some a product as well, and perhaps others. This could only happen with everybody saying yes, including the Anglican East Newfoundland Labrador Diocese. Happy City St. John's is on board. Jiffy Cabs is going to have a van outside that we're going to fill with food product. Paracott Farms and Terra Nova Foods and Murray Meadows Farms have donated some product, as well as Oliver's Farms. Canadian AV is doing the audio and visual. College of the North Atlantic is going to provide some students to help us volunteer, as well as the other vendors and board members of the Farmers Market. DC Design House did a wicked poster. You can follow them on their multimedia platforms and see it all. And, of course, we've got the man in the red pants bringing it home with an auction and 50-50 raffle all throughout the night. It's going to be, I think it'll be a pretty deadly time. I'm hoping to see 300 people through the door. As I said, you can get fed for $10. You can get doubly fed for $20. And why not donate $10 or $15 to the Community Food Sharing Association? Because my math is terrible, but for every $10 that that goes into the hands of Egg Walters and his amazing team, they can turn into about $425 or $430 worth of purchasing power for food items. So it's one thing to be able to donate food that you think, unfortunately, most of us in this province need on a semi to regular basis. But it's another to see put $10 on the table and turn it into $450. That's the kind of poker game I'd like to go to. I don't know about you.
It's amazing. I've often said, I've said it before, said it again, one egg can feed the province, right? And that would be Egg Walters. So listen, you got all this pulled off together. So it's $10 admission, and then for $10, is that how it goes? $10 admission, and for $10 you get a meal?
Frankly, I don't even think we're going to have an admission, except maybe a food donation.
Yep.
The idea is, my vision, look, I don't have a lot of money. Most of us don't. If you show up to an event with $40 in your pocket, you want to get value for your money. So I asked my friends who are chefs and entertainers, I said, donate what you can, but show up and we'll cover our costs, or donate what you can. And most people are donating their food as well as their time and their talent, whether it's helping out or cooking or picking up a guitar or pulling up with a car in front and offering $100 in cab vouchers, or providing beautiful briskets or lamb shanks or bread or potatoes. Give what you can, and when people show up with, $20 or $30, it's February, Daryl. It's right before Valentine's Day. Get a good meal cooked by top chefs, gourmet ninjas, for $10, or get two meals for $20, and give $10 or $20 as well in the silent auctions, or just cash a hand in the door. That's all I want. Your $40 will turn into, my math is terrible, about $1,000 in purchasing power for the food banks, and they supply 40 to 50 food banks across the province. So you are giving a lot just by walking through the door.
Yes, and you get to, I will be fasting. I will be full on fast mode on Tuesday. that is like, it'll be coffee only till I strap on the proverbial feed bag. It's going to be at the farmer's market. What time is it getting underway?
We are getting underway at the hour of 5 p.m. We're going to 11. We've got, there's going to be some frosty beverages to partake in. And the master, the floor ninja, Q, Stephen Quinton, who's down at the Adelaide Oyster House, and, of course, Q's Barbecue, will help run the floor. And maybe once you show up, I'll get you to help Chris Shepherd make our donut burgers. And I'll run around the floor for a little bit, because it's nice to have a celebrity hand out the food, and you certainly, I think you're experienced with the food glover too. Maybe we can make you
I'm a legend in my own mind, Jonathan.
Me too, man. By the way, I didn't see you at the last annual general meeting for legends in their own mind. I don't know. Did you get the minutes?
No, never got them, but I'll have to have a look. I'm sure they're in my email. Don't check my email. That's the problem. Jonathan, it's a great idea. Tuesday night, the farmer's market. Come, give, feel good about giving, and eat and feel good about eating.
Fill your boots. It's the farmer's market, of course, is on Freshwater Road, corner of Empire. It's 245 Freshwater. You can find lots of links on the old social media to the poster and to the event itself. Visit the St. John's Farmer's Market on Facebook for more details, or DC Design House. I suppose those are the easiest ways to go. But folks, really, even just show up with $10, and you know that that $10 will become 450 or 430. How could you not think that that is an excellent idea?
$10 for me is going to be a smoked beef sandwich. I can tell you that's what I'm getting right out of the gate as an appetizer.
Well, we're doing, myself and Chris Shepard, we're going to be doing, he's the master chef, we're making donut burgers, and I'm going to put some of my corned beef on it.
Ah, I've had your corned beef. Listen, Jonathan, it's a pleasure to talk to you, buddy. I'll see you on Tuesday.
Thanks, brother.
Take care.
Thanks for the time, and happy Sunday, everybody.
Happy one to you, buddy. Bye-bye.
Cheers.
I'm going to go to the next call, Raylene. I think, why not? My next guest is Kelly, and I don't know Kelly's last name, but she's going to tell me. She is the director of one of the absolutely stupendous choirs that are in this city. It's the Lady Cove Women's Choir. They have an event coming up, and I'm sorry, once again, you snoozed and you lost, because this event is sold out. But we're going to talk a little bit about this event and talk a little bit about this wonderful choir. Kelly's on the line. Hello, hey, Kelly. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
What's your last name again?
It's Kelly Walsh.
Kelly Walsh, right. How are you doing?
I'm doing fabulous. I'm actually sitting here in our rehearsal space and listening to the band practice their 80s tunes now, so I'm doing great.
I know. Like, this event is, you know, when you think about choirs, you do think about these more somber, classy events, and you have turned this idea on the its ear with your Lady Cove, as in L-8-O. What possessed you to do an evening of 80s music?
Well, we try to kind of, we do this concert every year. It's our major fundraiser as well. And so we thought, instead of, you know, selling tickets and things like that to raise funds, we were going to do something that we love to do, which is sing and have a dance. And so we try to change it up every year. And last year, somebody just said, my gosh, there's so many great 80s tunes. Can you imagine if we did a full night of 80s music? And we said, let's do it. So people are dressing up in their 80s dresses and outfits, and we're singing 30 80 tunes throughout the nights. And we've got all kinds of raffles and lots of food and drink. And by the end of the night, it's always a huge dance party. It's just one of the most fun nights.
And so is there dancing while the singing is going on? Or is this like a post?
Oh, absolutely.
Really? Excellent.
Yeah. Yeah, it's incredible. And it's so funny. A lot of our audience members, you know, we have a really wide age range in our audience members, but we do have a lot of people in their 40s, 50s, you know, 60s. And not many people get to go out and dance anymore, and it's incredible. You see 200 or 300 people up dancing away by certainly the last hour and a half, and it's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
It is a beautiful thing, and 80s music, let's face it, you know, most of them, whether you admit to liking it or not, there are a lot of earworms in there that you just can't help sing along to.
Oh my gosh, absolutely.
Yeah, I've been busted breaking out a few 80 songs in my car. I can tell you that right now.
And we're doing all the, you know, like we're doing Michael Jackson and Whitney Houston, and we're doing some beautiful slow stuff too. We've got Steve Maloney is coming in to sing as well, and he's doing Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah, which was written in the 80s. And we're doing, you know, Cyndi Lauper, Time After Time. Almost every one of those big hits that you can think of, we're covering.
How long have you been together now?
The choir is 16 years old now.
16 years. I had no idea it was that long. That's amazing.
Yeah. And it just feels like yesterday. But and it's funny, we've got 60 members now, but say about 30 of them are original members. They've been there for that long.
And do you still accept members?
Every couple of years we audition, so definitely. We always have a bit of a turnover. People either they don't have time or they go off to university. We've got a lot of university students or move out of province and stuff. So every 2 years we do an audition for new members. And then we travel every couple of years, so sometimes people can or can't travel, and we'll have new members that way as well.
You are obviously the director of the choir, but it must be just a buzz of energy to have so many people together singing the music that they love.
Oh, it's incredible. And then when you have 60 women who, you know, they come, this is kind of their release for many of them throughout the week. They come together. We have so much fun. We laugh so much of the time, and people really care about each other too. It's a really special, you know, being in a choir is a really special thing, and there's all kinds of research out there now saying that singing in a choir is good for you, for your physical health, for your mental health. And I think anyone who's spent any time in a choir will say they come to rehearsal and after 2 hours they leave and they just feel better. They feel better physically, they feel better emotionally, they've laughed, they've gotten to be challenged. Sometimes, you know, we work really hard if we're touring internationally. It's a pretty incredible experience.
So this one is sold out. People, you're going to need a bigger venue next year. You know that, don't you?
I know. This one sells out really quickly.
Mile one?
Again, they get to come and, I wish.
The bowl at mile one. Take it on. Seriously.
There we go. Wouldn't that be fun?
So what's on the horizon for other people if they wanted to look out for the next event coming up?
Our next show is actually in June. We're really excited. We do a lot of wide variety of stuff. So sometimes we'll do a heavy classical concert, then we'll do a pop show, then we'll do, you know, in September we did a full French-Canadian show. In June we're actually joining forces with the incredible Eastern Owl group. They're a group of six drumming and dancing and singers. They're releasing their second CD now, and we're doing a show and actually a professional video with them called Warrior. So it's going to be pretty incredible. If you haven't heard Eastern Owl before, I'd recommend getting online and listening to their CD and picking it up. They're an amazing, amazing group of women. And so we're bringing these two women's groups together and singing songs about the idea of, you know, women. It's taking care of each other and looking at all the different perspectives of women from different places in our province. And, you know, and basically there's a lot of music out there that kind of encourages women to be supportive of each other. And then there's a lot of folk songs and traditional music and traditional chants. So we're really, really excited about that. That's June the 1st.
That's June the 1st. So listen, it's been a pleasure to have a chat with you. Congrats on this big show.
Thank you.
And for the people who did snooze and didn't get a ticket this year, you might want to have a look out earlier year and probably get the Christmas present, you know? Get a hint
about
the Christmas present. I think that's the way to go.
It's a great night out for a group because you can book a table of 8 or 10 people together as well. So it's a really fun night out for a group of friends.
Well, you go have fun, Kelly. Give us a call. Okay. I'll be in touch with you again once this June event gets a little closer.
Fabulous. Thanks so much.
Take care. Oh, I love the red in the photo, by the way. All of you in red. It pops off the page.
Yeah.
Thanks, Kelly. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
That is Lady Cove Choir. Absolutely awesome choir. More wonderful art from this beautiful province. Going to the break. Back in a flash.
Call now. 273-5211 or 1-888-590-8626. That's 1-888-590-BOCM. Your Sunday drive continues right after this. This is Sunday Drive on the VOCM Bigland FM radio network.
Rolling along, Pink Shirt Day is coming up. What is it? We're going to find out a little bit about it, and we're going to talk about a special school out in Cornerbrook that really has a wonderful project going on. It definitely falls into topics that I love to cover on the Sunday Drive. John Dennison is on the line. John, how are you?
I'm not too bad. How are you today, Daryl?
I'm doing great. First off, I talked to you earlier the week, and it's what I love about this town and this province is just how small it is. It turns out that we'd actually met before.
I know. It's such a crazy thing, this Newfoundland place.
Isn't it? The 1 degree of separation for everybody.
Absolutely.
What school are you at, John?
I teach at Cornerbrook Regional High, Daryl.
And how long have you been there?
Oh, my goodness. I've been there since the early 90s, back during the Herdman Collegiate days, and spent some time in Lark Harbor. But I've been there ever since the inception of Cornerbrook Regional High with the amalgamation of Regina and Herdman.
Since Adam was a boy, basically.
Pretty much.
Right?
That's the way it feels sometimes.
So you must be very familiar with this whole idea of the Pink Shirt Day. Do you have any idea how it all started?
Well, yeah, it happened back in 2007, actually, at a school in Cambridge, Nova Scotia, when a young grade 9, I think maybe a grade 9, perhaps he was just entering grade 10 in September, his kind of first day at school, he wore a pink shirt, and two of the grade 12s kind of took exception to the fact that he was bullied about it, so the next day they wore pink shirts, and they brought in a bunch of pink shirts themselves, and started passing them out to everybody in the school, and it kind of took off from there.
It's really become a global phenomenon, hasn't it?
Absolutely. It's a worldwide thing. you know, of course, we've talked about doing this interview, so I did a quick little Google search, of course, which is the thing to do now. And, you know, from New Zealand, all through Europe, of course, the U.S. and Canada, you know, and even in Japan, apparently, they started wearing pink shirts on certain days. I think February 27th is sort of the North American, European date, but I think, you know, some schools change it up throughout the school year, whatever fits their calendar the best kind of thing.
Yeah, it's really opened up the conversation to acceptance of, you know, of everybody and all students and inclusion.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm sure, you know, we both remember what it's like to be a teenager, and having, you know, taught in the high school now for almost three decades, it the topics change in terms of why people are being bullied, but, you know, it's just out there, right? It's just a, I don't know what it is. It's a phenomenon of human nature, I guess.
Yeah, I know. I remember a couple of cases of people who were literally bullied right out of their high school, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's absolutely not something we like to talk about a whole lot, because it's, you know, it's a negative side of things. But, you know, schools, province-wide, country-wide, and internationally are doing their best to, you know, make everybody inclusive and make everybody feel welcome. And I guess Pink Shirt Day is a way of at least one day in the year when everybody kind of throws down the gauntlet and says, listen, we're not tolerating bullying today. This is a bully-free day. So
hopefully it'll spill over into every year.
Absolutely, and every day of the year, for sure.
Now, listen, you your school is doing something a little different and a little interesting. Tell us what you're doing.
Well, back in the day, sort of right after this Pink Shirt Day happened in 2007, it became a thing. There was actually a boys and girls club in British Columbia that created Pink Shirt Day shirts and started sort of promoting them and selling them across the country. And we jumped on that bandwagon and we were doing it. But then, the phenomenon sort of waned off, and we realized that the high school students like to just wear their own pink clothing, you know, so actually ordering a shirt kind of became passé, we'll say. But all of a sudden this year, I had a company in London, Ontario that I've ordered shirts from before. They randomly sent me a couple of pretty cool Pink Shirt Day designs, specifically with Cornerbrook Regional High on them. So I brought it to my student council and mentioned it to the president, the vice president, and they thought it'd be cool to order some pink shirt hoodies, you know, with kindness message on them, but also with the Cornerbrook Regional High stamp on there. So we decided to go for it, you know, and we've been taking orders all this past week. We're going to get the orders off tomorrow, Tuesday, so that the company has time to get them to us for probably the 25th, 26th, so we can all proudly wear them on the 27th.
And, of course, the shirts say Be Kind, which has really become the motto, I guess, of the whole movement.
Absolutely. You know, kindness works. It's the language the deaf can hear and the blind can see. You know, it's a pretty strong message. You know, if you can't be kind, then, you know, you really got to step back and look within yourself and see what's wrong, I think, right?
Well, I mean, everyone seems to be sporting the hoodies these days, so maybe not only students might be interested, maybe some people who are not students and adults in the community. Have you gotten any other interest?
Interestingly enough, you know, the power of social media. I had our social media guru, one of our secretaries, you know, post a tweet and a Facebook page message, you know, that we were actually promoting the shirts. And just like that, of course, a couple of parents started retweeting. You know, one of the local radio hosts here is a parent, and she, you know, made a comment that she'd love to have one. So we reached out to her and said, sure, you know, it's not a problem. You know, we can place some orders. So we've had a few orders from parents. We've had a couple of school district officials come up and place orders for shirts. So, you know, it's kind of cool. You're right. A hoodie is the go-to piece of clothing these days for just about everybody. You know, all generations love a hoodie, and the price is right. I must say, we were given a pretty good sweet deal on the hoodie price. So, just to put a plug in, unless there's a snow day tomorrow, and I'm not going to lie, I kind of got my fingers crossed here for that. you know, we will be taking orders again tomorrow and perhaps Tuesday during the lunchtime, if people want to drop by the school and place an order. So.
It's a wonderful idea. I hope you get a ton of people to stop in and grab a hoodie. And it's nice to have a chat about this day a little bit out in advance. Maybe when it's all said and done, I'll reach out again. Maybe we can talk to one of your fine students. I love chatting with students. Maybe it might be an opportunity to talk to students about what the day means to them.
Absolutely. We had some students lined up for today to have a chat about this because I like the kids to take control of their projects, obviously. And but, of course, being the snowy, blizzardy kind of day we've had, it kind of didn't work out with that. But I'm sure they'd love to have a chat with you after the fact, maybe, and let you know how things went and see if we've got any plans for next year.
Sure. Now, listen, let's change gears. Put on your weatherman hat. What's the weather report out there?
Well, it's miserable. I tell you, I've been out with the snowblower twice today, and having grown up in Twillingate, you know, this is a northeast coast kind of day for the west coast. The wind is howling, and the snow is blowing right at you, so it's miserable.
How much is down?
Oh, I'd say we've got a good 10 to 15, you know, since probably last night. But the wind is blowing it around, right? So yep. The whiteouts are crazy.
I hope it blows it all to Marble Mountain.
Well, yeah, that's right. Hopefully it plugs up Marble Mountain. And we'd certainly like to see that over here.
Listen, John, pleasure to have a chat with you about this wonderful event coming up for the, not only your school, but for the whole country.
Well, thank you, sir. It's been a pleasure.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And I hope you're wearing pink.
I will be wearing pink on the 27th, guaranteed.
Awesome. Okay, take care.
I have a magical collection of pink boxers.
Too much information, maybe? I don't know.
Did I say that, John, or did I just think it? I said it. Too late.
I didn't hear a thing. All I heard was hearts on boxers, and I'm thinking of Valentine's.
Listen, take care of yourself, bud.
You too.
Bye-bye. Pink Day coming up, folks. Going to the last break of the day. Where's the time, Don? Don't go away.
Call now, 273-5211 or 1-888-590-8626. That's 1-888-590-VOCM. Your Sunday drive continues right after this. This is Sunday Drive on the VOCM Bigland FM radio network.
The Sunday Drive with Daryl Power on VOCM is brought to you by Robothan Mackay and Marshall. Injured? Robothan Mackay and Marshall can help. Make the call today.
Welcome back to the show. I am always curious about what's going on with the legalization of marijuana and where it is for people, how they're sitting with it, if they're getting it, where they're getting it. And I've reached out to Kevin Todd, who I've talked to once before, and he has become, I guess, a sort of a roving reporter. That's what I'm calling him. Roving reporter on marijuana. Kevin Todd is on the air. Kevin, how are you?
Hello. I'm fine. How are you?
Doing great. Listen, it's been, it's over 6 months now. Seven, eight months. So people... At the beginning, say it was going to take a while to get the kinks out. Are the kinks out?
Definitely not, Daryl. They've gotten worse, and we've seen an uptick in the gray areas of buying marijuana, as you call it.
The gray areas? What do you mean by the gray areas?
Those would be text places. You text, they give you a menu, they show up at the door, you pay $80, you get 14 grams. And there's also places that are now online where you order and they come to the door.
So, and of course, and is business increasing there because of the lack of availability in the legal market?
Yeah, they're citing the fact that the price is ridiculous and no one can ever get anything, and they run off their feet. They're telling me when they come to the door.
The people that you speak to who are going into stores, how frustrated are they?
I have a friend, and he said don't use his real name, so I'll call him Billy. He is the guy who does the phoning around. He phones Tweed, he phones Dominion. He's found that about 95% of the time they have nothing. And if they do have anything, they're ignorant to him on the phone. He'll say, well, what do you have? And they'll say, well, you have to come to the store. And so he goes to the store, and the main complaint is that they don't have anything that you would want to buy. And if they do, they say, well, you have to buy 15 grams at $15 a gram plus. So if you can imagine going to a beer store and they're saying, well, we only have Sapporo and you have to buy 15 dozen.
Ah, so that's what's happening. I thought it might be the supply would be like a just only low quality, but it seems like only the expensive stuff is what's available.
Well, I wouldn't say that's 100% true because none of what they have is any good because you look at Puff Pass, which is an independent guy in Clarenville. He's been all over your VOCM saying he's going out of business because he's being told what he has to order, how much he has to order, and the price he has to set it at. And he's saying that people don't want the legal stuff, Daryl, because it's way less than 20%. cost is too ridiculous. I'm sitting here now, if I was you and I was having people over, I have $40 on the table. I can go to, and they don't mind me saying it, www.thejungleboys.com. Within 20 minutes, half an hour, I've got my pot delivered to the door for $40.
So this is a surprising gray area to me. So look, I guess what's happening must be happening is that people are going to some of the dispensaries in and around town, become a little frustrated. It's kind of like going to eat at a bad restaurant. You know, be spoiled once and you may not return again.
That's exactly what it's like, Darren. And you have a lot of the players that were supposedly out of the game that are now back in the game under different names and they're back in the delivery game.
Yeah, I've heard the Puff Puff Pass guy on Ahmed Patty. I've heard Thomas H. Clark, and everybody seems to have the same complaint. Is it your belief that most people are looking for like higher levels of sativa than that is actually in available in stores?
Yeah, the sativa is the elevate one. That's the one that the young kids and the people going out to dances and stuff. Now, myself, last night, I watched my Leafs win the hockey game. I smoked an indica, which is more of a relax. It's not an elevate. It doesn't get you on the go. It just more or less puts you in the couch. But either brand that you go looking for, I mean, here's what it comes down to, Dale. You've got Trudeau, Tweed, Ball, and all of them, and they're getting beat by a kid who hauls up on my driveway on a Friday night in an 09 Ranger because he's got a website, and he can give you quality. He can let you pick your price. He can let you pick your quantity. Pick what if you want sativa or indica. And it seems like the government can't. Well, you had to come to the store, and you had to buy 15 grams of Bodie McBoatface, which has 5% THC. It's like buying 20 dozen O'Doul's and wondering why you can't get off on them.
This gray area, is he concerned that his day might come to an end and he might end up being poking into a door of an RNC officer, let's say?
Well, the text guys I won't mention because they don't want to be, but I mean, if he's got a website up, he's not terribly afraid, is he?
Yeah, it is a brave new world, and I guess, I don't know if you know about the... with edibles, which are still sort of like in that sort of illegal zone in this country. What's your experience and what are you hearing on the street with regards to the availability of edibles?
There's another website I could mention now. It's Butter Brothers, butterbrothers.com, B-U-D-D-E-R-B-R-U-D-D-E-R-S, butterbrothers.com, fired up right now, and you can order bars, gummies, whatever you want, Carolyn, they're in town and they're not hiding it. It's a website. They got it up on the line, so obviously they're not afraid.
Oh, it's not even something that's national coming through via Canada Post or the Express Courier. It's right here.
These are the boys hauling up in an 09 Ford Ranger going, "How are you tonight, boy?" And then they make it themselves.
It is a brave new world. The government maintains that they're going to get the kinks out. What's your assessment of this? What's going to take for you to say, okay, well, you know what? This is finally, I think the kinks are out, and I am going to go to my regular dispensary from now on and not going to get it any other way?
It would take for them to realize, as we've said before, you're not financing Muskrat Falls. If I can get it for $5 a gram, and I'm not going to One-Eyed Bob behind Coleman's, and I get a quality, and we were promised, anyone who smokes pot was promised that you were going to have something like NLC, you would go in, you would have well-trained people, you would pick your product, same as you would a beer or wine, how much you want to pay, et cetera, et cetera. It didn't come down to that. So for us, regular Joes with no criminal records who are not hiding anything or just want to smoke a bit of pot, price, selection, availability, and stop screwing around.
You got the last word of the day, Kevin. I'm always curious as to what's happening, and I will wait in hope that you can call us at some point and say, you know what, I think their act is coming together, and let's see how it all shakes out. It's a pleasure once again to talk to the roving reporter.
Well, there is a part three to that, and that will be online sales, but it's as always, it's been a pleasure, Darryl.
Take care.
Cheers.
See you, Kevin. Bye-bye. That's it. Some more food for thought, weed for thought. What do you think? I'm at the end of the show. It's been a great day here in the Sunday Drive. We're going to shut off the car now and pull her back into the driveway. Thanks to Raylene Mackey for helping me out, as always. Thanks to all the guests on the program. Congratulations to those who won the wonderful novels from not only Grandpa Pike's Outhouse Reader, but also some of Joshua and Michelle Keep's novels, and there'll be more of those to give out in the future. Until we see each other again next Sunday, ladies and gentlemen, God guard thee, Newfoundland and Labrador.